This is 71467 Nevada Recycling and Salvage, Bruce Reno Disposal Company et al. Mr. Rice, Mr. Simmons, we are ready to proceed. Mr. Rice, or... Excuse me, Ms. Rice. And if you wish to reserve some time, please, I'll stay.
Yes, please. I'd like to reserve 7 minutes of rebuttal time, please. Good morning. I'm Stephanie Rice on behalf of the appellants in this action, Nevada Recycling and Salvage and Rubbish Runners. And may it please the court. This is essentially a textbook antitrust case where Reno Disposal Company, a wholly owned subsidiary of Waste Management, in early 2012, entered into an agreement with Castaway Trash Hauling to carry out a secret acquisition plan to combine and essentially create a monopoly in favor of Waste Management, shutting out the competition, including my clients, Nevada Recycling and Salvage, and Rubbish Runners.
Counsel, since you bring that up, that's kind of was one of the arguments that was made in the summary judgment, and dealing with the 56F, can you talk about what you were able to develop to present that particular issue of this, so to speak, nefarious relationship and agreement?
Yes, Your Honor. With respect to the 56F issues in this action, procedurally what occurred is Waste Management of Nevada became a party pretty late in the action. In May of 2016 is when they first became a party. The same day that Waste Management of Nevada filed their answer, Waste Management of Nevada also filed joinders in the two motions for summary judgment that had already been filed and opposed by Reno Disposal Company and refusing. And so, on behalf of Nevada Recycling and Salvage and Rubbish Runners, we opposed those joinders because we had no opportunity to do any type of discovery as to the party Waste Management of Nevada. That's significant here, particularly because even in the event that the Noir Doctrine does immunize Reno Disposal Company, because somehow the incidental petitioning that did occur after this conspiratorial agreement was formed, it doesn't apply to Waste Management of Nevada. There's been no evidence and no testimony before the court that Waste Management of Nevada engaged in any type of petitioning activity or was granted a franchise. They were not. This separate entity, Reno Disposal Company, was. So in our 56F request for additional time to do discovery, at least with respect to Waste Management of Nevada, we had asked to be able to do the depositions and written discovery of the person most knowledgeable with Waste Management of Nevada in order to determine why Waste Management of Nevada was the party who actually paid this purchase price, or if they actually were the party who paid it, or if they were just the party on the purchase agreement with Castaway. And what the arrangement was, if Waste Management of Nevada was in fact the entity that paid for this franchise, what was the arrangement between Reno Disposal Company and Waste Management? Because Reno Disposal Company is who transferred the franchise to, or Castaway was transferred the franchise to Reno Disposal Company. Excuse me.
Even having said that, was there any prohibition in the agreement that the city signed off on as to assignment? Or was it assignable pursuant to what the city had set forth?
It was assignable to permitted transferees, and Reno Disposal Company was a permitted transferee. That is undisputed. The franchise does provide that it could be transferred. The bigger issue from my perspective here is that the conspiracy was long completed prior to any type of petitioning activity.
Ms. Reese?
No, go ahead.
How have NRS, and I'll call them NRS, and rubbish runners been injured? Even if you get over the hump and you decide there's a problem, how have they been injured? NRS isn't even capable of providing the type of services that were at issue. Rubbish runners didn't apply for a franchisee agreement. How do we get to the standing issue? How do we get over that hump?
Part of the issue in this action is that NRS and rubbish runners didn't have the opportunity to seek a franchise, because by the time there were actually public meetings before the Reno City Council, these two different zones had already been selected. It was already determined. This had already occurred, and they didn't have an opportunity to apply for a franchise. It's undisputed that they were both in business at the time, that they're both in the business of trash and recycling, and essentially competitors of Reno Disposal Company. However, because Reno Disposal Company went to the city of Reno, and said, we have decided there's these two zones because you're not going to give us an exclusive monopoly, so we're both applying for these two zones, and it's all worked out. And at that point in time, it was August of 2012. This agreement between Reno Disposal Company or Waste Management of Nevada and Castaway, or Reno Disposal and Castaway, was formed at the latest in February of 2012.
But Council, seem to be making a major leap as to the activity of the city in terms of the business they conducted when they opened this up. That it was precluded anyone else from bothering to apply. It wasn't publicly noticed and open to the public for so many days and so on. I'm having a problem with those things. But more so, as Justice Stiglitz pointed out, the clients weren't in the same business. They were still allowed to perform or retain their prior clients in the business activity they were within. So how do we get around some of the federal case law that's on the table as to what is going on in this particular activity?
Well, as far as the federal case law, there's been extensive precedent that provides that any concerted action between co-conspirators to eliminate even just the competitive bidding for a contract is actionable harm. The cases that address specifically the antitrust standing and burden of proof for injuries is greatly reduced, much like our Nevada Unfair Trade Practice Act also provides that anyone who's either directly or indirectly injured may bring a private cause of action, as well as in Zenith Radio Corporation versus Hazeltime Research. The court addressed the practical limits of proof for plaintiffs seeking recovery for injuries from even just a partial or a total exclusion from a market, stating trial and appellate courts alike must observe the practical limits of the burden of proof which may be demanded of a treble damage plaintiff who seeks recovery for injuries from a partial or total exclusion from a market. Damage issues in these cases are rarely susceptible to the kind of concrete, detailed proof of injury which is available in other contexts. Nevada Recycling and Salvage and Rubbish Runners were actively servicing this market at the time.
Ms. Rice, I wanted to ask you about the Nevada Unfair Practice Act claim. NRS 598.0403B states that NUPTA does not apply to conduct which is expressly authorized or regulated or approved by an ordinance of any city or county. The Nevada Administrative Code, Section 590.100, states that respondents have rights provided under their franchise agreements and the ordinances allowed for that. why isn't that the end of this case? I mean, your point is your clients weren't afforded the opportunity to get into the game, but it does seem like, at least with respect to a NUPTA claim, where the city is involved in regulating this particular activity, there's a specific exception to any claim under the statute. It didn't get argued much in the briefs here, but it does seem like subsection B of 3 ends the inquiry. Could you comment on that?
Yes, Your Honor. NRS 268 does provide that the city can displace competition, but that's not what occurred here. The city explicitly indicated that it was not willing to grant Waste Management or Reno Disposal Company an exclusive monopoly to service all of the Reno area. And I guess essentially because of that, this conspiratorial agreement was formed to get around it. With conspiracy, we as early as February of...
But you say that the city did that. Did they put that in the written documentation or the written city guidelines that the same person could not hold both?
They did not, but Waste Management and Reno Disposal's vice president admitted it in his deposition at the joint appendix, page 1334, that Waste Management, or the city informed Waste Management they were not going to create any exclusive rights for Waste Management only.
That being true, I still come back to it. The city adopted their regulations. If the regulations don't provide for that exclusion, how are we to put something in place that the city didn't adopt? That's what you're asking us to do.
The case law is clear, as in the Clipper Express case, the Ninth Circuit Court held that two parties can't get together and agree to an unlawful arrangement and then...
Well, that is the point.
Approval.
What is the unlawful arrangement if it's not statutorily created and assignment is allowed without restriction?
Under NRS 598A, it's unlawful to conspire to create a monopoly or combine to monopolize the market.
Which is why I raised the question, because it does seem that 3B creates an exception to a claim based on that statute. And so I get your point that the city didn't intend, at least based on the record site you've made, but there isn't any evidence apparently from the city's RFP or however they advertised this that there were to be no exclusive arrangements.
I don't believe that there is anything in the record that shows that specifically.
So even if there had been, let's just assume for the moment and accept the record site that you've made, how does that change the statutory provision? The statutory provision says that a NUPTA claim doesn't even apply where this issue is involving a regulation or approved activity under an ordinance of any city or county.
I would respectfully submit that the ordinance does not provide that this is appropriate conduct after a private agreement that was later submitted to the city for ratification.
So let's go to the ordinance that is at issue, Ms. Rice. What ordinance were these franchises issued under, and what is problematic about the ordinance that isn't within the scope of that exception in the statute?
It is under the Reno Municipal Code, and it essentially mirrors the transfer provisions that are provided in the franchise agreement, that it can be transferred to a permitted transferee.
All right.
But here, Conspiracy is two parties agreeing to take some unlawful action to the detriment of another party. In this case, when they agreed in early 2012, whether or not they carried it out, the conspiracy was done. They have conspired. And can I reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal?
Counsel, we're going to give you 3 minutes of rebuttal because you basically used up your time. We'll add an additional 3 minutes, counsel, if you so need it.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mark Simons, on behalf of the respondents, Reno Disposal and Waste Management Nevada, thank you for the honor of appearing before you. I know you'll hit me with some questions.
Counsel, I guess at the outset, they have alleged a conspiracy. How do you respond?
You can't conspire to do something that is lawful. And what we have is lawful activity. And that's where we get into the Norr-Pennington Doctrine. We get into 598.040. If you're asking a city to implement something that falls within their police powers, such as it falls under 268.081, which is the collection of waste and disposal of waste, which is a public health issue. The Supreme Court's already said this in the Weehawker case. The disposal, that is the activity that the cities get the police power to enforce and oversee and issue franchises. So we know that the city has this absolute right, and we know under the antitrust and the Nevada state antitrust laws that there is an exception to the antitrust laws that says if this is adopted according to an ordinance or a statute, and Justice Hardesty, you referred to the ordinance, and if you look at the franchise agreement, it calls it out specifically how the city is enacting this franchise agreement. It says, pursuant to NRS 268.081, which is the authority to regulate, NRS 268.083, which is the authority of the city to grant a franchise, and then the Reno Municipal Code, Chapter 5.9, saying this is what we're enacting. This is the statutory authority we're relying upon in order to issue this franchise agreement. So the franchise agreement, is it valid? May I step back a moment and tell you what is undisputed in the case and what is not contested? The plaintiffs had conceded that the franchise agreement was a valid and unambiguous contract. The city was authorized to enter into it. And that the franchise agreements expressly contemplated the consolidation of the two franchises into one. These are just Judge Flanagan's findings. The franchise agreement expressly pre-approved Castaway assigning their contract. And the city expressly approved Castaway's assignment to Waste Management, thereby establishing a single franchise situation. So those are undisputed facts that are before this court. So now what we have is, did the city validly exercise its authority, which we see has been conceded? Yes, they did. But the claim now is that the parties got together and went to the city and said, we want you to enact this franchise agreement according to the validity and authority that the city has granted, which the city then did. Now, the real issue is, does that activity, the pre-issuance of a valid franchise agreement according to valid state law, does that create exposure? Does that conversation that took place between my parties and Castaway, and Castaway and back, create exposure or liability? An agreement on its face does not create a conspiracy. That's one of the elements. There has to be the wrongful activity. That's the core of the conspiracy claim. The conspiracy itself doesn't stand alone. This is not a substantive claim.
But the odd thing, Mr. Simons, is that there, why did the city even go to the trouble of creating two zones? I mean, that's troubling to me. I get your point about the structure, the ordinance and the agreements and what was contemplated, but was the creation of the zones a ruse?
No. Here's what happened. If we step back and put this in perspective, it just didn't pop into existence. 1994 through 2012, there was a franchise agreement that the city had, but it was very limited to just garbage, and garbage is a subspecies of the world of waste. And so what the city wanted to do, starting in 2007, was conducting these meetings. And it's in the record, they go from 2007 to 2012. Over 5 years, they're bringing in the stakeholders, they're talking to people, because what the city of Reno wants to do is expand. We just don't want our franchise authority to be limited to waste. We want to expand it to multiple waste fields. So what the city does is decides that we also want to become green. Okay, and what does that mean is invoking the franchise authority to cover recyclable materials. So the city embarks on this five-year process involving stakeholders, involving the appellants, saying, look, this is what we want to do. We want to expand upon our powers. But the city in the franchise agreement calls out, not everybody can do what we as the city want, because you're going to have to service over 70,000 residences, commercial businesses. You're going to have hundreds of employees. You're going to have call centers. You're going to have this massive capability to implement an infrastructure. So what they did is they looked, the city looked and calls it out. The city adopted the processes and said, look, based upon our examination, there are two companies that could possibly fulfill what we want. So we're not going to exclude one or the other. We're going to implement a process that allows both of you to participate because you've achieved our standards. So that wasn't the ruse. So the city then says, but now that we have two that do it, we don't care. And in fact, we want one of the other to acquire each other so that there's one phone call we have to make.
Now, wait a second right there.
Sure.
My understanding, and I have the same concern Justice Hardesty had. In my understanding, during these talks, the city made it very clear that it did not want to grant an exclusive franchise for its implementation of single-stream recycling services. Is that incorrect?
I believe that's incorrect.
Okay, tell me why.
This is why. It's because the city, the context of the quote from Mr. Martinelli was taken out of context. Mr. Martinelli said the city examined who was capable of performing this, and it was Castaway, and it was also Reno Disposal.
So why doesn't that support the argument they didn't want an exclusive franchise in that, in fact, creating the zones, and then to have you come and gobble up the competition to get those zones?
Because what we do know is what's been found in the record is the franchise agreement expressly contemplated consolidation of the two franchises into one franchise. And that the agreement itself specifically says that either of the franchises that are held by Castaway or Waste Management can be assigned to the other.
Okay, so that's contrary to what I just said. Maybe it doesn't exist there. The citation was 13 Joint Appendix 2682. So
I'm sorry.
I'll have to go back and look at it.
Okay. Because what I'm getting at is the foundational agreement that was entered into said that it could be consolidated, and it was expressly anticipated. And the witnesses, which were the mayor and the parties involved, said, look, we anticipated this would occur. And then what we do know is that the city expressly approved it. It was brought to the city's attention in 2013. And if the city didn't want that to occur, and the city wanted to make sure that there was a separate zone state separate, then the city would not have expressly allowed the consolidation.
That's well, the best and that kind of begs the question, to allow those zones and to have separate franchises run by separate companies, wasn't there a significant amount of money expended by these companies to create their distribution process, their collection process, and that just kind of strikes me as very inequitable.
Inequitable to whom?
To the franchisees in those zones.
Well, it's not inequitable because the franchisee didn't have to assign. For example, Castaway didn't have to assign. If they negotiated a value and they received the compensation, the consideration for what they held, mm-hmm. and they thought in the free market environment, you know what, that's a good price. We will sell to you,
okay.
And we're entitled to do that.
That's fair.
But what do you say to their argument in their reply brief that the North Pennington does not insulate from antitrust attack a post hoc ratification of something that was illegal or conspiratorial in the first instance? Because you get a blessing from the city after the fact doesn't mean when it's a fait accompli, it was a good thing to have done in the first instance.
I agree with you. And what they say is all the cases draw a distinction. Parties get together, like in the Nord case, 24 railroads got together for the express purpose of putting out the truckers. But did they undertake any anti-competitive action? Did they drop rates? Did they do anything in the market to implement the monopolistic activity? No. And that is the distinction. Because if you do anti-competitive action, actual action in the market, then you're not entitled to go and be ratified and say, oh, we did this bad stuff, and now we're going to use the Norah Pennington to reach back.
Right.
So there's a major distinction. All the cases call this distinction out. But if you get together and say, you know, this is what we want to do. We're not going to do anything in the market, but we're going to go ask the legislative body to enact some type of legislation, or in this instance, a franchise agreement. And if we do...
But the disclosure postdated the passage of the franchise agreement, is my understanding.
What disclosure?
That the idea that here's forthrightly what we want to do. We want one to be acquired by Waste Management, and we're going to combine, et cetera. There was no... They weren't wearing their heart on their sleeve going into the discussions with the city.
And we pull this out in our briefing, really highlight this. It took a deposition of the appellants. The appellant said, we knew ahead of time, before it even went to the city, that what this contract allowed was for the consolidation. And we said to the city manager, the city attorney, John Shipman, we talked about this to his attention in September and October and said, look, we're knowing that, and it's out in the market, that there's going to be a consolidation. And the agreement expressly considers a consolidation. And the quote was that it fell on deaf ears. The city was fully aware of what was going to transpire, fully cognizant of it, and actually engineered the contract itself to allow for that specific outcome.
Because what do you say to the testimony from Iazzi and the other, whose name escapes me, that's sort of to the contrary?
Zadra?
Yeah.
Again, I briefed that pretty extensively because here's what we've got. We have a contract. I can give you all the reasons. The parole evidence rule, she doesn't get to come in and say, hey, look, this is what I intended when the express... The
right, contract. I understand that. But
The other aspect is she is not... if we start examining what a legislator says or a city council member says and we're to allow for challenges, that disregards the collective activity of the body, say the legislature or the city. They enact the rules. Otherwise, everything would be susceptible to challenge. A contract for some person who comes in and says, look, I'm one of seven, and I maybe would have done something different. I don't know. I didn't know this was going to occur. That's why it was not considered by the district court, because what we did have was an unambiguous contract that had specific call-outs. Her lack of knowledge, or her claimed lack of knowledge, isn't what we look at. We look at what was the city's knowledge and what was the city's intent. And we do have witnesses that say, look, the city is bound by all the knowledge of all its agents. And so all the agents were fully aware of the activity. And we can't take this outlier and say, look, that's going to cause a question of fact. Did I answer the question?
Yeah. There's nothing direct, though, that shows that your clients declared in advance this is what they were doing. Correct?
Nothing formal. There's nothing in the record. I agree with this. Nothing in the record saying if this takes place, this is in on the table that may occur.
Yeah.
Before
that
you
answers my question. Thank you.
Before you segue to your next area, there's a 56F issue. Mm-hmm. They were granted 56F originally. They took advantage of it. They made a new request for additional discovery. Has the competing summary judgment motions were on the table based on the joinder. Why shouldn't the court have allowed it?
If you step back, you already recognize that there was already an original grant. There was an original summary judgment with the identical issues that were granted subsequently by Judge Flanagan. However, the original summary judgment contained both the liability and the damage argument together. And subsequently, they were carved out into two separate motions. Judge Flanagan said, you're going to have time to go do your discovery. Do whatever you think that you need to do in order to respond, which they did. Interrogatories, request for production documents, depositions. The summary judgment was again refiled. At that time, the theory that was brought forth to Waste Management of Nevada was the alter ego theory, that Reno Disposal, if it is liable, Waste Management is liable as the parent company under the alter ego doctrine. Now, in order for that theory to have any traction, Reno Disposal has to have exposure, has to have liability. And the Judge Flanagan found they don't have liability in the first place. So any discovery with regard to a parent company's exposure in an alter ego is irrelevant, and it's not unnecessary.
Mr. Simons, do you believe appellants have established standing?
I do not, and I want to flesh out your earlier question. It's not just exclusion. Their theory is we were excluded from the market, therefore we automatically have standing. That's not the standard. The standard is you have to be a competitor. You have to be able to compete to have sustained a harm. What we've pointed out is that Rubbish Runners was not a competitor. They were not capable of achieving, not our standards, the standards set by the city. It's a small harm hauler company. NRS, as you point out, was incapable of hauling. They're just a waste disposal. So, should I keep finishing?
Don't keep up.
Okay, so going back to standing. And so they were not capable, and they didn't even achieve these franchise objectives. So what did the city do? The city called them out as an excluded hauler, specifically addressed their capabilities, and said, you continue to service your excluded hauler accounts. Therefore, we know the city addressed them. We know the city took a look at exactly what they were capable of doing, and the city gave them the option to continue doing what they did. So if you go back to the fundamental basis, could they have been a competitor for the overall services the city required? No. So therefore, they don't have the standing, they haven't achieved the standing. Just because they were excluded, if you're excluded from anything, you still have to establish the fundamental basis that I could have done this, therefore I have sustained harm.
Thank you.
Fair? And Rubbish Runners doesn't collect waste.
No, Rubbish Runners is the waste collection company.
Okay.
They have the trucks. NRS is the, they call it a MRF, it's the materials are dumped in there. It's like a transfer station where they're processed and then sent somewhere else. So NRS is just kind of like the home base. And does that answer that?
Mm-hmm. Anything additional?
Thank you for the opportunity to appear before you.
Ms. Rice?
Thank you, Your Honor. Just to touch on that standing issue real quick, Nevada Recycling and Salvage, at the time that the franchise was enacted, was the only facility in northern Nevada that was an actual recycling, what Mr. Simons referred to as a MRF, materials recovery facility. The city was introducing recycling. That's undisputed. Castaway was also NRS's largest customer. So the second that Castaway was absorbed by Waste Management, they lost their largest customer. Rubbish Runners has also been a hauler in the area for years. That's undisputed as well. And Rubbish Runners lost the ability to service the commercial customers in Reno. They were able to keep select customers who they were able to identify on a list, but if they ever changed, they could never go back. They've absolutely been damaged by this conduct. And I think part of the big issue in this case is all of these facts and evidentiary statements on summary judgment should have been construed in light most favorable to Nevada Recycling and Salvage and Rubbish Runners, but they weren't. We have the affidavit of Sharon Zadra who said, no, we didn't know that they were going to sell out. No, there were no qualifications. In fact, Sharon Zadra states at a council meeting on the record that she had no idea there were other haulers and that she had asked, and the response was, not really. There were no qualifications. Mr. Iazzi testified in his deposition that he would have liked to have known beforehand about this secret acquisition agreement. It's not the petitioning that's wrong. It's not the city of Reno entering into franchise agreements that's wrong. It's this conspiratorial agreement that occurred months prior to the three total public meetings that occurred in October and November, two in October, one in November, regarding these franchises, well over 6 months. And that's only based on what we got. There are still over 1,500 documents. There was a pending motion to compel that Reno Disposal refused to produce. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you. Chief, can I ask one question?
Yes, go ahead, please.
I just want to address again, and maybe I've misread something, but my impression was there was an indication that the city made it clear they didn't want to grant an exclusive franchise for the implementation of the single stream recycling. Where did I get that?
That was testimony from Reno Disposal and Waste Management's area manager, and that is located in the appendix at volume 7, JA 1334, lines okay. 5 to 6.
Okay, that's it. Okay.
And it is also in Ms. former Councilwoman Sharon Zadra's affidavit, and that is at volume 17, JA
3267. Got it. Thank you.
Anyone else have anything else before Ms. Rice?
Thank you.
We are in adjournment. I thank Council for the arguments instead of this matter.